AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
With the boys. From high octane to adrenaline. Starting lineups to starting grids. Gridiron to Grand Prix. Get laced up.
Let's go.
It's time for Banter with the Boys.
Yo, welcome back to Banter with the Boys Fast Laps. Back at it again with the Australian GP recap and Japan preview. But first, let's obviously bring everybody in here. We start across the table, so let's start next to me this time. Joe, what's poppin'?
What's up? Happy to be here. Happier after that last result. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Nice. All right. Sounds good. And again, recording on a Tuesday. So I think my thing will just be to ask Cole how his week's going every week. So Cole, how's your week going?
Not too shabby. It's not snowing. Last week, that was horrible. I know we live in Minnesota, but let's bring it back to 60 for me, huh?
Yeah. Bring it on back to 60. We're ready for spring. That's for dang sure. And of course, last but not least, Tyler, what's going on?
What's happening, brother? Doing good, man. The snow last week definitely sucked. I am ready for it to be spring, ready to hit the links maybe 2-3 times this whole year because it's probably all that's feasible for me with two kids and another one on the way. But those 2-3 times are going to be a blast, brother.
Do you have a foursome you go out with?
Depends.
I guess that was kind of a weird question. I'm talking on the golf course.
For the golf course, no.
Oh, well, hit me up, homie.
Definitely we'll hit you up.
What's going on? But anyway, obviously, we can't forget about Kev. He makes all this stuff happen. Thanks, Kev. So we'll just head right into the Australian Grand Prix recap. And diving right into the Australian Grand Prix recap. During this race, we had a combined 10-time world champion drivers, like total championships, just sitting watching this race because they retired. I mean, it was a crazy race. It lived up to the hype. We had that carnage we were looking for. So good for Carlos, obviously he came in singing Smooth Operator. That's great. We had the great quote from Gunther that was Vamos Carlos, but we got to talk about Max retiring early. Were we excited, gentlemen, about that?
Real excited, dude. We didn't have a Verstappen win or a Red Bull podium even. It was great, dude. I was, as soon as it happened, especially with how early it happened, I was just excited that we were going to have an actual race on our hands here. Now, it didn't end up being much of a race for number one because Science kind of just ran away with it and took it from there, So it was like, I honestly would have kind of liked to see how Science would have done against Verstappen with the way that Ferrari looks right now, especially because this was the first race. Now, obviously, Verstappen kind of had that brake issue from the jump, but it was the first race that Max wasn't able to separate and get a 1 second gap to break that DRS zone going into lap two. It was the first race that had happened. So Science was on his butt and then he was past him. Now, again, Verstappen had issues, but it was a fun race to watch.
Absolutely. That car looked fast. I know when it happened, the group chat kind of blew up about it, and I had money on one of the March Madness games, so I wasn't watching at the time, so I had to restart it like right when it happened and then mute the group chat just to see what happened first. Luckily, it was only lap three, I think, right? So it didn't really affect too much, but no, I think it's awesome. I mean, I'm pretty openly against Verstappen. So to see
Red Bull
and Red Bull
as a whole.
Pumped to not see them in the podium. pumped to not see him finishing the race in first. And I have to agree with Tyler. I'm really curious to see how this week goes because, I mean, that Ferrari looks quick.
Yeah, that Ferrari does look really quick. Man, lap 2 to 4, I feel like I was getting blown up on the phone. I had people reaching out to me that have never reached out to me about F1, just excited for a change in the race. It was so exciting. And yeah, really, Carlos Sainz coming in, getting a win 16 days after having a surgery. What a tank. Like, dude's unstoppable. I mean, Ferrari, what are they thinking right now, right?
No doubt. And I mean, you know, so with Max's brakes stuck on, that I'd imagine that won't be a problem going forward. Red Bull will probably correct that issue. But winning 19 of his last 20 coming into this race, if I'm not mistaken, was it, Joe? Yeah, 19 of his last 20. And then including winning the last 9 races.
Yeah, he would have tied his own record of 10 consecutive wins that he set last year if he would have won this last race.
Yeah, so obviously all of our predictions included Verstappen in there, and we were all wrong. So the Australia curse is just back again for Max Verstappen. You know what I mean? Like, it's just weird to see. It's great to see. I mean, hopefully we get, you know, maybe a little bit closer season in the championship points for as far as teams go. But let's talk about Ferrari a little bit. I mean, yeah, Carlos Leclerc running a good race, but Carlos just running away with it. I mean, he looked good in that car. I mean, is that something we're going to see, you know, maybe even this weekend? But I mean, just the season as a whole, is Carlos really going to be able to show and prove that he deserves maybe a shot at that Red Bull seat? I know we saw some April Fool's stuff going on, but does he have a legitimate chance?
I think he does, especially with how he's been performing. Obviously, he's the only other racer besides Verstappen to win. But what also happened there is, I mean, we always talk about Charles and how Charles is definitely their number one. Charles is their top driver. But have we overlooked Sainz this whole time? Because everybody talks about Charles and he's the top guy. But, I mean, I think we overlooked Carlos. He's a dog. When it comes to winning races, he's the guy. Charles will get you the points for sure. But I'm a big Carlos fan now, even more.
I completely agree with you, especially on that last point. Carlos, I mean, he's proven he's the only person outside of a Red Bull to win a race in the last however many races. I think it'll come down to, is he as consistent as Charles? I think we got to look at everything. I don't think he was that consistent last year. I feel like he had a few bad races, and maybe that's why Ferrari chose not to go with him again in the following year. But, man, he's proven something. There's still a lot of season to go. I'm sure he can still mess something up, but I hope he, you know, takes this and runs with it.
No, absolutely. And I think Carlos has always been like a ridiculously underrated driver for his actual talent, right? Even when he was in like McLaren, he wasn't the number one. He got booted from, what was it, Renault? No, I'm sorry. It was Ocon. I'm thinking of Ocon, the Ocon situation where he got booted and then came back. But he's just always been so underrated. And I'd never understood really why. He's bounced around with all these teams. I mean, in terms of like Ferrari not choosing him, I don't think it has anything to do with Carlos, right? It simply has to do with you are getting Lewis Hamilton. All that he brings outside of the racing ability, which is obviously top notch. You can make a very strong argument against that this year in terms of him versus Carlos, or really the top 5 or 6 in this race alone, outside of Stroll. But it's Lewis Hamilton. You're not going to turn that down for Ferrari.
But I mean, even with that, obviously, Charles is younger and he's kind of on the climb now with everything as far as he's got more future with with Ferrari, which is huge. And I mean, if you're Carlos, so where do you want to go? You know, like where do you look to go after this?
I think you have to have the hope that you might get looked at for that Red Bull seat. I mean, the car's quick right now. And if he could have kept up with Max potentially this race in the Ferrari, like, we could see a battle going back and forth, you know, but maybe Max's ego, you know, sorry, Netherlands folks, but like maybe Max's ego gets in the way a little bit. Like we saw with Ricardo early on. Maybe you see a little bit of that with Carlos because he's good enough to compete and beat Max potentially in a Red Bull car.
No, absolutely. And I mean, with what you said, even with like the inconsistencies that you guys are like saying, like even last year, Like, there were two spots away in the WDC, but it was by 6 points. Like, with all of Ferrari's technical issues that they have with the car, especially last year with all the issues they had. Now, Charles had his fair share as well. Don't get me wrong. I mean, when it's only a 6-point difference, like, that's really not an inconsistency to me in the grand scheme of things. 6 points in the whole season. And then, I mean, Cole, what we said about the age, they're only 3 years apart. That's nothing in F1.
No doubt. And Carlos being only 29 years old, he just surpassed his 1,000th point.
Yeah.
How many F1 drivers actually make it to that point even? Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said about that. I think you have to take a serious look at
Carlos looks old. He looks so much older than Charles. I would have never guessed. I've honestly never looked up his age. I know Charles is young, obviously, but I never looked up Carlos's age. I thought he was like 35. You know, he looks like an older cat.
He's only 29, bro. And Charles also has a baby face, too. So he looks, yeah. Like far younger than he is.
Facts.
Yeah, true. But yeah, I mean, with Red Bull, I think if Carlos really, truly cares about wanting to win a championship, which every F1 driver does, that's the ultimate goal. Like, Red Bull is the only true shot he really has. Like, with all the other team openings, Aston's not going to give him a chance. Mercedes isn't going to give him a chance at winning. I mean, I think Mercedes is so light years behind Ferrari and Red Bull at this point, even with the new regulations in 2026, with everybody building a completely new car. I just don't see Mercedes competing anytime soon.
I agree, but I still think Mercedes has that seat open, and I think they're going to offer it to him when push comes to shove. We were just talking before the pod. Kimi's not doing amazing so far in F2. So if that seat's open and Red Bull for some reason goes with one of the V-carbs or for some reason keeps Perez, Merck might be the best option. Or he's waiting for Audi to come in and take that spot.
But even that Audi spot, so even if you wanted that Audi spot, you could still sign a 1-year deal with Red Bull. Like, yeah. I don't think Red Bull is going to, like, necessarily... this is 100% all contingent on what Max Verstappen decides what he's going to do. I don't think he's leaving Red Bull. He'd be stupid to leave Red Bull, especially if it wasn't for a Ferrari. Like, it's not a lot of kids' dreams to grow up driving for Mercedes. You know, if you're driving in the pin... Now, Lewis changed
maybe,
that.
Maybe give it like another 5, 6, 7 years. Yeah, absolutely. Lewis probably like created that. But absolutely. No, you're right, though.
100% agree. But you got Schumacher with Ferrari. Like, it's just Ferrari. That's, you know, like, that's where you want to grow as your kid growing up watching the sport. Most typically, right? So, I mean, I don't know why Red Bull wouldn't offer Carlos the book at this point. He's obviously the second most talented driver on the grid. I mean, I wouldn't say obviously, but debatably the second most talented driver on the grid. And he's far past Perez at this point.
And also, I mean, Ferrari next year, even with Hamilton, they need to either match Red Bull's car or have a better car. Because with those two lineups going against each other, if Carlos is at Red Bull, if they have an equal car, that's still a heck of a race. That whole season's, I mean, nuts. Because those are probably four of the best drivers out there right now. And if they're both competing with an equal car, that's going to be fun. But, I mean, even if Red Bull is an equal car, it's tough to say because I hate Red Bull and I hate Verstappen, but I would root for Carlos, and I think, you know, it might be still in Red Bull's hands there to lose.
I would root for Carlos too, but I think that the curse of that second seat is going to get him. I think Max is still going to outperform him in the same car. The team's going to prioritize Max because he obviously can win it. I think it's the best car to be in. Obviously, if Carlos gets offered the spot, he's going to take it, and that's the best decision for him. But when he gets in that spot, he's still getting second.
I think I don't entirely agree with that, because I think if Carlos actually goes there and he starts popping off the first 5 races and is outperforming Max, at the end of the day, Red Bull cares about championships and they're going to want to go with that.
Helmut cares about, like, all he cares about is who's going to deliver us the best week in and week out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that kind of comes down to if Carlos can just show out in a Red Bull and kind of exceed everybody's expectations, Red Bull's going to be kind of hands tied to go with him, and Max is just going to have to suck it up. I don't think they'd risk anything like that just to get Max, you know, another driver's championships.
Yep. I completely agree. And even if Red Bull were to, you know, give Max whatever preferential treatment, that second Red Bull seat is still better than any first Red Bull seat out there if the car is not even, like, you know, the car is just still. Now, assuming that doesn't change, that could very well change, right? But you also have to expect all these upgrades these other teams are bringing, so is Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't get talked about. But they're bringing upgrades too. They're not just putting all the focus on next year in 2026.
Also, with the Red Bull car, it is clear as day that Perez is not the driver you want if it's a close race. If it's a close race and you need to get points, like, I know we talked about early on with the Red Bull and Ferrari fight, early on with Sainz and Verstappen and how that would have ended up. But, I mean, if we're talking last year on this track with Red Bull, even Checo is fighting for first place last year. And he's not even close to that. He wasn't even moving up. You know, he was in fifth. He wasn't even fighting for that spot. And I don't know. Like, I think, you know, I think it's a lot closer race than we think. And I think with, you know, more consistent finishes from like Carlos and Charles, it's going to be hard for Red Bull to keep that one spot, especially with Checo not performing.
No, I think you're hitting that right on the head. I think it is a lot closer than we think. And I think this past weekend just proved that with Checo, like you said, finishing fifth. He was nowhere near the McLarens at the end of the race. And like, so reeling back in, you know, obviously Carlos with the driver of the day. Carlos goes P1, Sainz P2. Let's talk about the team we haven't really talked about too much yet. Our boy Lewis Hamilton with the engine failure on lap 17, potentially caused by rapid loss of oil pressure, followed by a shutdown of the engine to protect it. That's from F1.com. So they got to correct that, obviously. And then obviously George at the end pushing maybe to outside of his skill level.
You don't think so? I want to touch on that, like the George aspect of it. So I don't know if this was just not as broadcasted with how much hate George is kind of getting, or Alonso is getting, shall I say, in the incident. Because if you listen to the radio message before that Alonso happened, Alonso's car was breaking down. He didn't come off that, like the reason he was slow there is because his car was malfunctioning. That doesn't get talked about, but there was direct radio message of him communicating with his engineer saying his car is like basically failing. And then like George being like aggressive, George has to. He has a chance of still catching Fernando at that point. He's going to push until he absolutely can. It's so close where he doesn't get that radio message that Fernando lost 0.4, 0.4 of a second when you're coming into that quarter and you have to take that direct line is huge. So like I don't get like George is being looked at like, why are you being so aggressive? And Alonso's like, what the heck? It's like, what's he supposed to do if the car is simply failing?
Yeah, to jump on first with Lewis, I think with Lewis, that's tough. He's not comfortable in the car, so it kind of just sucks. It's like, even when he's out of the race, he can't even race. You know, at least he can go, you know, hang out a little bit, relax, wait for the next race.
Yeah, he went and hung out with Max.
Yeah, but like also like with Russell here, it is also kind of, you know, we're talking about Carlos going to Red Bull and all that. And with Alonso, I mean, he is so fast in any car he's in. He is just so impressive, holding back even Russell and the Mercedes. Mercedes is a faster car right now.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. But so like, to have
it's not
him,
great, but I would agree with that.
it's faster than Alonso's driving. Alonso's just so good. So that's interesting there, but that just sucks because, I mean, Mercedes needs those points, and now it's like, now we're looking at two people fighting for first, and it's not even kind of close. And who knows? I mean, Mercedes is fighting for fourth, fifth at this point.
Mercedes was left without points that race now because of that.
Mm-hmm. That's huge.
That is huge.
Especially with McLaren grabbing a 3-4.
No doubt. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, just sucks. What do you got, Joe?
Oh, yeah, I just, tough race for Mercedes. I just want to also touch on the George Alonso incident as well. I did hear the radio messages of Alonso saying that he was having issues. I heard them right after the crash happened. But then after the race, he went to the stewards and said that he changed his driving style in that lap as well. So his story is kind of all over the place for me a little bit.
So he might caused the car to happen.
Alonso. So lap over lap. And the stewards pointed all this out in the data from the car. They see.
So I didn't see that.
Yeah, they see him doing a specific break. And I think this is, I feel like, were you seeing a lot of Alonso hate? Because I was seeing so much George hate over the weekend. And
it was more like George hate for him just being like overly aggressive.
Yeah, my take and what I saw, they showed him the stats from the race, lap over lap. He's braking at this point. He's shifting at this point. He has this much gas going into it. And then on that one lap, he kind of lets go a little bit, brakes a little earlier than he usually does, and he comes out and saying, yeah, I was trying a different line or is trying a different technique there. Obviously, George has been around him for a while. He's expecting the same thing. You saw that gap close incredibly quickly. He loses that downforce, and he loses the car. I think because they have those stats, they're able to point out what happened. Sure, give Alonso the penalty. 20 seconds is pretty harsh, though.
Harsh.
I don't think it should have been a 20-second penalty, and I'll give that to Alonso, but I understand something needing to be given out
I mean, a 10-second, though, because in the grand scheme of things, like, nobody was really in a position to advance a spot from, like, for it to really matter, because it's on, what, two laps or on the final lap?
It was second to final.
Yeah, it was the second to final lap, because the lap technically ended, the race ended on a virtual safety car, right? But it was, like, nobody was really in a position to do anything, like, and even if Alonso was taking that, so that's news to me. I didn't know that. So he might have even caused the car to have the malfunctions or whatever just from putting it. I don't know. Nonetheless, but a 10-second would be more than applicable there. Like, yeah, you ruined George's race. Like, you took him out of points.
Just watching it, it was kind of scary to see Russell do that. No? Oh, and Russell, like, wrecked and was on the side. I was like, ooh, they're not showing him he's okay. He was pretty quick on saying he's okay, but
he was crying for a red. I shouldn't say crying. That's the bad way to look at it, because I mean, he's in a position in the middle of the track where somebody's coming in at 150 miles per hour, instantly kills him. But he was just like, he really wanted a red flag.
Yeah, it was interesting. I almost kind of wonder why. I mean, I know why they didn't bring the red flag, but they probably should have given a red flag, right?
Yeah, he had a car in the upside down in the middle of the track after a high speed corner.
A little weird.
It is. I mean, definitely a safety issue, but we do have to move along really quick. You McLaren fans, real quick, give us a quick, real quick recap on their race this weekend. How impressed are you with McLaren's performance this weekend, Joe?
I mean, they maintained where they needed to maintain. I think, if I remember correctly, they still lost. Who started the race first, second, third? It was
Verstappen,
Sainz, and Lando?
I'm pretty sure it was Leclerc. I'll find it might here.
Definitely wasn't Sergio.
Ending third and fourth, I think, because I do remember one of the McLarens, at least one of them was fighting Ferrari for a little bit, and that was probably Leclerc.
No, it was Lando, you're right, because it was Sergio, but he got the penalty.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So we see, I mean, two Ferraris and then, I mean, I love seeing Lando on a podium. Man, I wish he got a win. I think he's probably competing for the most podiums without a win at this point, but consistent drive from both of them. Really awesome to see Oscar fourth in his home race. I was kind of hoping they may throw a team order at him to let him get the third.
That's not the way to do it.
No, definitely not.
That's not the way to do it.
I agree. And I don't think he'd want that either. Oh yeah, 100%. It was great though. I love seeing McLaren so high up there.
Yeah, I really wish Oscar would have, like, passed him and got the podium for himself. But, like, how encouraging for McLaren.
Yeah.
How encouraging. So even if Verstappen doesn't, you know, whatever doesn't happen, like, they're still 4-5. You know, it's still an incredible race for him. And that car looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Light years ahead of the Mercedes at this point. Far ahead of Aston at this point. Like, I mean, if they make some major upgrades, they might be able to close that gap a little bit between that Ferrari and Red Bull. But, I mean, in my opinion, it's far and away the third fastest car on the track right now.
Yeah, and I think they can close the gap on Ferrari quicker than we think, too, McLaren. I think they'll be battling Ferrari a lot quicker.
That's the thing, though. Like, I think that Ferrari is closing that gap on Red Bull so much right now.
They are, like, but, like,
you're really kind of catching them both. But that's...
Like you said, like, too, like, Red Bull's got upgrades coming, too. We got to know that.
At the end of the day, whoever has Adrian Newey in their headquarters is going to bring the best upgrades throughout
the
year.
Right. And then moving right along into actually Aston, you know, we kind of touched on Alonso a little bit. We should talk some Lance Stroll probably. Obviously Lance finished after the penalties and whatnot, P6 for Lance. And then, Alonso finishing P8 after that incident. But, what do we think about Aston's performance this weekend? The other weekend.
You know, for as much as we dog Stroll, we got to give credit where credit's due. Finished P6. Now, it would have been P7 if Alonso didn't have the penalty. But, like, good race for Aston. You know, that's what they kind of have to expect at this point. Anywhere from that 6 to 8 spot is kind of where that car is, with the two Mercs not getting any points. You know, if Lewis and George are in this race, do they finish where they're at? Probably not. But who knows? Because Alonso was in front of Russell, so... But good race for Aston. Good weekend.
Yeah, the reality of it is whenever Lance is getting points for that team, it's a win for that team, even if it's 9th or 10th. So you got to take that as a big win for Lance. It was a good race from him, and Alonso obviously doing what he does.
Yeah, I got to give credit to Aston just as a whole. Definitely making strides. I think they're good for where they are right now. Looking at the times, they're still 40 seconds away from Perez at the end of that race.
No, I mean, everybody, I feel like, is still 40 minutes or 40 seconds away from 40 minutes. Wow. Yeah
40 Hell seconds yeah. away from Perez in fifth place, though. So, they still got to work on something.
That's the thing, though.
And Perez didn't even run a good race.
He made
exactly.
One place.
And that's the thing. Those top three teams, Red Bull, McLaren, and Ferrari at this point, they're just so light years ahead of the rest of the pack.
But I would think that Aston should be competing with Mercedes, though, which they did this race for a minute. But I would imagine even for the rest of the season, that should be, I don't know if their goal or benchmark or whatever you want to call it, but like they should be trying to compete with Mercedes right now. I would think.
I mean, they're beating them right now.
Yeah, Mercedes versus Aston, I think, is going to be the fight for four.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. Let's just move right into the Williams situation with Albon crashing in FP1 and their decision to put Albon in the car.
It's a lot cooler of like a situation to happen if Albon gets points. I think it's kind of just like whatever at this point. Cool, obviously you're going to go with your better driver and all that. It's a lot, you know, cooler of a story to kind of dive into if he got points. It's kind of just whatever, you know?
No, for sure. I totally agree with you. But I think there's still something to be said that obviously they don't. I mean, yeah, he's your better driver. But, I mean, it's kind of crappy for Sargeant, who didn't crash in FP1.
They saved millions of dollars by not putting him in the car this weekend, okay?
Ain't that true? But I mean, even on that note there, like, how boring of a race objectively versus last year, right? What do you guys think that was? Do you think because of what happened last year, they were a little bit more reserved this year?
100%.
Because even at the start of the race, like the one recent, we didn't have any action into 100%. Turn one.
And exactly. And like my wife actually watched it with me. So I was like, oh, get ready. I was like getting charged up. And then like, you know, lights go out. I'm like, oh my God.
Carnage.
And then it's just carnage. And then there was no carnage. And I was like, oh, never mind. You can go back to scrolling or whatever you're doing, you know, whatever. But like, I totally agree with you. I think it did feel like the drivers were more reserved. I mean, towards the end, everybody was getting a little more antsy, but it did feel a little bit different. And maybe I would imagine they all still had PTSD from last year. I don't know.
Do you think it was maybe a little bit of team direction too?
Maybe
like,
telling
hey,
them
there
to
was
chill out.
Millions upon millions of dollars worth of damage last year. Let's not have that happen again.
I think it's more so kind of just, I don't think it's, I really don't think it's that. I think it's more so around like a lot of these drivers are like, okay, if I can play it safe in this first turn, somebody else is going to be an idiot and I'm going to be free to get free placement, right? So a lot of these teams know where they're kind of sitting in the standings. So I think a lot of these drivers, especially the experienced drivers, are like, I'm not going to get crazy into this turn because there's going to be a wreck this race. There might be a couple. So I'm just going to play it safe, especially if you're like Haas. Raced an amazing race, just playing it smart and, you know, pulled out with some good points. And that's huge for them, but it's also smart driving, right? They knew people were going to wreck. They knew they're going to get moved up. Just keep racing your race. This is a race where you can be in 13th, 12th, and still end up in points just from racing your race and being, you know, consistent.
And not getting sucked into the rubbish, like straight up.
Yeah, completely agree. Maybe they were playing a little reserved. Maybe it's because De Vries wasn't on the grid anymore. I don't know. There's a lot of things we can probably account it to. I will say, Haas playing it safe, I think, for most of that race. Magnussen coming out, fighting Albon near the end of that race for the last point position, making Williams' weekend so bad. Going back to Logan really quick, I don't even know what to say. I hate to say it was a perfect start to a weekend, but it was only the perfect start because I think we love stuff happening on a race weekend, right?
I mean, probably, but how much longer does he have a contract with Williams?
I think they're both up at the end of this year.
Are they?
Half the grid is smoking. There's probably, 13 drivers that don't have a seat next
it's
year.
It's the most freaking movement we've ever seen, but like, do you think Logan's probably out?
No, Logan's out, dog. Ollie Bearman has that seat lock in hand.
For Williams specifically?
No, I'm sorry. You that's Haas, bro. I'm tweaking.
Logan's native to Miami, I believe, right? That's his home race?
No, Texas.
Texas? The Texas one's his home race? He'll be watching that one from the stands next season.
No, I think he actually is from Florida. I think you're right.
I think I was.
Yeah.
Okay, so say the line again. He'll be watching Miami.
He'll be watching in Miami, enjoying the beach, enjoying the sun, and watching it from the stands next year.
Oh, dang.
Rough.
Dang, that's rough. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of like the Albon, it's just like, What a tough like decision you have to be put in as like James Vowles, right? Yeah. The principal for Williams. Like that's such a tough call. And you made the right call. You right, have to put right. in Albon. You have to.
Is it really a tough call for him though? With how Sargent's performed all last year and this year?
No, I'm not saying it's a tough call. It's a tough position to be in to have to tell your driver you're not racing this weekend and we're giving your car to the other driver. Like that's not a conversation anybody wants to have, right?
I think it's tougher if it's not Sargent in that seat.
It's irrelevant. Like the level of hardness of how hard it is doesn't really matter. It's still not it's a conversation you never want to have, right?
Yeah. I guess if you want to go back a year and a half, they wish they never put that guy in the freaking car.
Oh my gosh. I think this is a lose-lose conversation.
The hate for the lone American.
Yeah, I think Cole's new nickname on the show should just be like the hater or whatever.
Did he like DM Cole's your girl or something, bro? What's going on?
Jeez. Well, let's just keep it rolling. Let's just keep it rolling. Keep it rolling. Well, let's obviously talk about the V-carbs. Yuki in points, and Ricardo is once again kind of just meh. You know, at least it was better this week at his home course. Better-ish, yeah. Than prior weeks. He hasn't got points yet, right?
No, he finished 17th this week, bro. You had three cars that had a DNF.
What do you mean he finished 17th? What are you talking about?
I'm tweaking. I'm looking at the driver standings.
Okay, because I was tripping. I was like, wow, I've been talking the last little bit off this thing in front of me, and now I'm wrong. Oh, my God. But,
apologies.
Okay, good deal. So, no, finished 12th. I mean, that's better than what he's been doing, but still not points for a guy who's gunning for that second Red Bull seat. You know, I'm not trying to take anything away from Yuki, but, like, I know we've kind of talked about it every episode so far, but is Ricardo done? Like, is this it for him? Because right now he doesn't make a good argument for that Red Bull seat at all.
He sure doesn't. I mean, the car...
Neither is Yuki, to be fair, but...
Yuki took advantage of the opportunity this week and got a P7. You know, that's... I think P7 is probably V-carb ceiling this year.
Right, that's probably where they should be if they are succeeding.
They're not... They would need another Australia last year where 8 cars are out of the field for them to finish anywhere in the top 5 or anywhere near it. You know what I mean? So it's... It's the true test is Yuki versus Danny Rick, right? Yuki is highly outperforming him right now.
Oh, 100%.
I think in reality, neither of these two are in contention for that Red Bull spot anymore.
No,
they're just hoping to get a seat next year.
Not at this point. Yeah, they might. They might. Maybe Williams, you know. Williams
well, I mean,
might
even
have
with
a couple.
V-carb.
Or stay. Yeah, true. Joe, you got anything on the V-carbs? Or
I'm curious.
Prefer not to comment.
I mean, I want Danny Rick to be doing so much better than he is, man. If you would ask last year, it's unacceptable to be behind Haas and Williams, right? That's kind of not the situation this year. They're obviously doing a little bit better, but Yuki's above them. Danny isn't. I am curious to see if V-Carb would keep both of them on or if they would go with some fresh meat.
Yeah, no, for sure. I guess we'll find out, but it's a good chance they could stay. Haas, let's just move on along to Haas. We've already talked about them a little bit. 9 and 10, getting in points again. Another good run from K-Mag, and I mean, Hulkenberg too. I mean, another great run from Haas.
How about Hulk? Back-to-back races with points.
I mean, they're making an argument to come back to Haas next year, if not a better seat, at least.
Haas has to give it to Ollie Bearman. That guy needs a chance.
You think he's just a shoe-in for Haas?
I do.
Nowhere else?
No, I mean, where's he? No. Well, he's a Ferrari. So he's a Ferrari reserve driver.
And doesn't Haas use Ferrari engines?
Well, Haas is like
V-Carb. Part of the program. Like,
V-Carb to Red Bull.
I gotcha.
It's not quite the same, but it's almost the same as Haas to Mercedes.
Sure.
Sorry.
Ferrari.
Haas to Ferrari.
Yeah.
But like last year, it was kind of like, I feel like they more so favored Magnussen last year, and especially the whole season. Right? So this year, I mean, Hulkenberg is the one showing out. Obviously, Magnussen helped last week, but as you should when he's one out in front. The previous race, not last race, with Magnussen helping out. And then Hulkenberg having this again this most recent week. It's interesting. Who do you think gets a second seat now? Because they're both racing outstanding. But, I mean, Hulkenberg has the edge. But isn't Hulkenberg a little bit older?
I think they're very close.
They got to be close. I would think you got to give the one seat to Hulkenberg.
Well, I don't mean is there really a true one seed?
Probably
with Haas?
Not. Probably not. Whoever's running faster that day will be in front for Haas, I would imagine. But
and does it even make sense for Haas? I know. I think in the first episode here we shot together, we talked about how Haas should just restart, get fresh drivers, young drivers. Does it make sense? I mean, these guys are kind of showing out this year. They're getting more points than they have in the previous years, especially with the amount of top cars that have been finishing in these last couple of races. Does it make sense for Haas to start fresh or try to keep some of that, you know, seniority?
I think it'll be a mix. I think Tyler's right. I think it'll be Ollie, but I think it could be either one battling it out for that second spot, you know?
Yeah, and so Hülkenberg's 36, K-Mag's 31. So it's 5 years. I didn't think it was that much. I thought they were so within either. Like 1 or 2 years, right? So, I mean, in my opinion, it would make sense to keep a Magnussen. Like, the two rookies, the two young driver system, it simply doesn't work. Haas learned that the hard way with Mick Schumacher and the Russian cat, right? Mazepin. Yeah, with Mazepin. So, like, the two rookie system, I don't think is going to really work, especially for a team that, you know, they need all of the finishing in the driver's standings as they can to get that money, because they're hanging on to threads at this point. They have been, right? So I think, like, pairing a Ollie Bearman with a K-Mag, you know, K-Mag being 31, 5 years younger than Hülkenberg, I think that would make a lot of sense, right?
If they end up in last place again, though, they're clearing house. I think both drivers are gone.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be in last place,
though. I don't
think
so either.
With how they look, even against, you know, with Sauber, Alpine, and Williams, with how poor they're looking right now, and even the V-Carb with the inconsistencies, like, Yuki with the 6 point last week is their 6 points this year. So, yeah, they're 3 points up. But, you know, the total of that 3 points is so much, it means so much more at the bottom than it does in those middle packs there, because you don't have the chance to get a P2 to get that huge difference, right? Mm-hmm. Those 1 to 2 points are going to be the difference between, you know, 6, 7, 8 this year in the standings.
And then that just rolls us right into Alpine. They finally ran laps under championship points. And that's it. So they're just not good. Straight rubbish for Alpine again. We can't really expect anything from them pretty much the rest of the season, but we'll just keep an eye on their, quote, upgrades and see what happens. And on, obviously, Sauber Steak, whatever we're calling them, you know, their pit troubles just continue. The long pits, they have an issue right now with, like, cross-threading their wheel nuts, and it's just been a huge problem all season.
I actually do have a funny call out. I was watching that race and seeing them again, like, I think 2 30-second pit stops, and then the one pit stop that they do get in normal pit stop range, I just see a little nut rolling down pit lane away from the car after it. So something's going on there. They made a bad part. They just need to get that fixed and hopefully start making points.
Yeah, no doubt. And with that, I mean, that kind of wraps up Australia. We'll just head right into the news, honestly. So right off the bat, McLaren technical director, car concept and performance, David Sanchez, only a couple months into his new position, has vacated that new position. It's kind of how it's been put in the news. So it's, quote, mutual. But as Tyler said before we started recording, there is nothing mutual in F1. You McLaren fanboys, what's up with that?
So
I mean, that was like a big winter hire, you know?
Yeah, I looked into this a little bit. It was actually agreed upon that he would come in actually January, February of 2023, and that was delayed. So there was already some kind of like bad blood or misunderstanding between him and Zach Brown. The relationship wasn't able to be mended in the meantime since he did come here. It was this year, so he's only been there a couple of months. And it came to a point where they just agreed that whenever their future outlook just wasn't on the same path of what they wanted to do to develop the car and kind of take that team. So again, they mutually parted ways, but at the end of the day in the F1, there's no such thing as a mutual parting ways, right? Well, he got more than likely let go, but if it was in the op because they were going in different directions, there was that disagreement there. It more have been mutual than we might think, you know, than it's led to be. But at the end of the day, if you're not going to get on the bandwagon of the higher ups in the company you're working for, it's not mutual for you to be let go because you're not getting on board.
Well, and with that, like, David Sanchez, this is also on F1.com, said, like, while the role we envisioned had agreed to was not aligned with the reality of the position I found. And then, you know, he went on to say other stuff, but like, that's pretty much what you were just saying. Like, maybe what they had agreed upon originally wasn't actually what was going on. And so therefore they mutually left, but maybe it is more of a, actually like he quit rather than they let him go.
Do you think that's any tie into like Zach Brown? I don't know. Like they painted him kind of bad in the Drive to Survive.
Painted who bad?
Zach.
Okay.
I don't think he looked that good. Kind of like they kind
of. I think
him look,
in the first couple of seasons maybe, but he's definitely like become more of the good guy recently.
But yeah, I get that, and I think he's still kind of, you know, a douche behind the scenes. Specifically, like I'm talking about the golf when he was golfing with Lando, trying to make sure that he stayed with McLaren. In the most recent Drive to Survive, he just looked weird. Like, he just played it weird. Like, the whole situation was just kind of eerie and weird around Zach. And I liked him. I liked him when he... I kind of liked him when he first came on. I think he kind of turned the whole program around. But I think now it's just... I don't know. I just get, like, a weird vibe from him.
Do you think he's, like, getting a little bit of an ego? A little bit more with himself and, like, what he's been able to do? Like, there's no doubt. Like, I agree with you. I kind of liked him at the beginning. And now it's kind of evolved into something else. Where now I'm kind of, like, getting this weird vibe. But... I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know if it's necessarily ego, but I mean, you can kind of argue that, but also you can have ego. Last year they were right. Kind of trash. True. And then he kind of helped turn that car around obviously and made sure that everybody is pushing in the right direction to make one of the craziest jumps in F1 in a while, right? For how fast that car got, which is awesome. But I don't know. Yeah. I just get a weird vibe from him.
Yeah. I mean, what they showed, I don't think that, They put him in the best light in that golfing thing. You know, I'd love to see what all of the conversation was that happened behind that. You know, like there's obviously been prior discussion. And at the end, I think what Drive to Survive was like doing was saying like, yeah, well, they're always actively trying to make sure the drivers don't go. And it's always a business. They were kind of trying to paint it in that light. And it did. I agree. It put him, made him look like, it just looked super uncomfortable. It looked super uncomfortable and they didn't paint him in the best light.
I think too, though, like, he almost isn't one for the cameras. Like, once he gets behind the cameras, he's kind of weird. He's kind of different.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
Well, I was... Sorry, go for it. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, and that's the thing. Like, no matter what, as hopefully our listeners find out soon, cameras don't always, you know, paint you in the best, like, picture. You know what I mean? Like, you got to know the vibe of the conversation, too. You know what I mean? Like, of that situation or whatever they're talking about. Or have at least a little bit more context, they're going to select and pick and choose what they put in there. You know what I mean? So they might know that he looks a little awkward or says something goofy or whatever and looks uncomfortable. Well, it's probably because he is. And they chose to use that scene. But I totally get what you're saying.
I like that point.
But moving right along with our news, I guess if you call it news, Alpines are going to bring some upgrades in Japan. I guess kind of like the first step of weight reduction, you know, like a new front wing. Sounds like some of these upgrades, though, could maybe just be more for fun or trial, Joe. Like, weren't you just looking up something,
yeah,
you know, earlier today? And
they're not going to say it outright, but from what I was reading, it very much sounded like they're kind of just throwing things at the wall right now and hoping that they stick. I don't think we're going to see any huge difference in performance come Japan. I still think they're going to be fighting for, definitely trying to fight for points, but probably falling short.
Yeah, it's for them to actually go into the weight reduction. It's like, finally, right? It took you this long to put an emphasis on it. You know, you're three races in and it's, at the end of the day, they're light years away from points. So they have to make these upgrades. You have to use the season as a trial because the wind tunnel, the sim hours, you can put as much hours into the sim as you want. But at the end of the day, until you get that car on track is when you get the full feel.
100%.
So I think you're going to see a lot of like the free practices and them kind of trialing the car. And then the race, they might, at the end of the day, they have to try something, right? What they're doing is not working. It's not going to work. Use the race as the trial. Then do what you have to do to get that car in. At least, like try to get 6 points on the year at this point, you know?
Right.
No doubt. And you, like you said, you're not going to get better numbers or, you know, from what you're looking at than having the car on a real track with a real driver behind it.
So in the same kind of regard, though, so in your guys' opinion, how much do you just take this year as an L and you put the effort into next year and ensuring that this can't happen again?
They've been doing that. They're already doing that. I would guarantee you they're already doing that. They're just trying to do these little upgrades kind of like what Joe was saying, just throwing something out there, seeing if it sticks, and maybe use those similar ideas into their development next year.
But with that regard, though, they don't have any drivers under contract next year. You have to put a car that wants to bring somebody in at least.
That's what they got to be working on it. If you're at, the world class, you know, racing championship of the world, like, I mean, you got to be working on that already, you know.
But I also think they still, I mean, granted, they want to throw stuff at next year, but they also still don't want to finish dead last this year. They want to do something this year. They're throwing stuff at the wall, but at the end of the day, they think it's going to work, and that's why they're doing it. So I think that they still want to try to get, you know, up to that seventh spot maybe this year and try to still, you know, secure some good points and not be the laughing stock at ninth.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think they're trying to avoid being the laughing stock, no doubt. Tyler, you actually had some hot news for us to wrap up.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call it necessarily hot news as much as just it's rumor season and the rumors are heating up. And it's rumored and it's come out, actually. I've seen it on a couple different, like, news outlets that Lawrence Stroll is prepared to just throw all of the money at Adrian Newey to lure him to Aston from Red Bull. Now, a lot of people would say, oh, it's a billionaire doing this, but they already took so much of Red Bull's team going into last year. So a lot of what Newey has put into place, like the developing pieces that he kind of has, is almost, it's not set in stone. Like, there's still obviously a lot of his team at Red Bull, but if Newey comes over and he's able to do that, does he bring a lot of those Red Bull team and those engineers with him? And what does that look like for Aston then? Because that would be wild.
If they did that, does that paint a pretty good picture for Alonso to stay?
Like, absolutely.
I mean, screw it. I'm already pretty dang quick in a car that's not quick compared to other teams. And now they're just going to make all these upgrades. I'll just stay.
And how does that look for Red Bull, you know, with all that? But I mean, at the end of the day, too, I mean, Stroll's here for one reason. Obviously, he's loaded. He doesn't really do this. It doesn't seem like he does this to try to make more money, right? He's here to try to win a championship. I think that's the first goal. So why not? I think just go for it. I think he should be throwing money at a lot of guys out there and just bringing them over to the team.
And in that same regard, it sucks that, like, he has so much commitment to Lance, because until Lance is out of that seat, that team will never be able to, like, compete for a team driver, a constructor championship, unless the car is in, like, Red Bull's pace right now and Alonso or whoever takes it to the point where Verstappen can do last year. I just don't think that the team is going to be able to compete at a ridiculously high level with Stroll at that second driver.
Who would you like to see in that seat, hypothetically, real quick?
And then let's say that Newey goes there, because that changes a lot of things. That's what I mean. Under the assumption of Newey's there, I'd love to see Fernando be able to have a ridiculously good car underneath him because of what you said. He's been overperforming with the car that he's had the last 2 years. But I would love to see, like, a Sainz with him, bro. Dude. You get the two Spaniards behind the wheels of the Astons with a car as good as a Red Bull. Holy crap, the elbows that would be pushed out by those two and be able to compete. That would be fun to watch.
100%. That would be fun to watch. Let's just wrap it up on that. That's it for our news. Let's just run right into our Japan preview. And obviously, to start off our Japanese Grand Prix preview, Joe, we'll have a kind of a recap of last year's race, getting us ready for this year.
Yep, back at it with a recap for the upcoming race. I always like to start with some fun facts. Suzuka is the only figure eight track on the calendar, because it has that little bridge that goes over the track. And in the last five Suzuka GPs, which I think spans back to 2016, Max has been the only non-Mercedes driver to win that race, with Lewis, Bottas, and Nico Rosberg being the other ones to win it. Right. Last year, Japan. Starting grid, we saw Max, Oscar, and Lando. Some McLaren representation up in that front row. Love to see it. It was Oscar's first front row start as well. I'm really hoping for some strong representation this week as well. We saw McLaren pressuring Max at that start. He had to start defending against both of them right away. Of course, we get a safety car out, end of lap one due to debris on the track. This is caused by Alfa Romeo, Alpine, and Williams all kind of getting too close to each other. And Perez, starting fifth, also getting some damage by getting squeezed in between Alonso and Hamilton, needing to take immediate pit stop under the safety car for a new front wing. We saw Bottas as the first DNF after Logan locks up into a corner and drives right into his rear, sending him into the air, landing on his under panel, and then having to drive back to the pits to lick his wounds and retire the car. We saw the two Mercedes fighting the majority of the race, actually, bumping into each other at a few points. We heard Russell on the radio kind of yell out, who do we want to fight here? Each other or the drivers? Obviously getting a little uncomfortable. On lap 48 of 53, we also saw team orders ask Russell and Hamilton to swap, leaving Russell open to attack from Sainz, who takes that position. And Perez, lap 12, takes a corner sharp and drives into the back of Magnussen, giving both cars more damage than they already had. This brought out a virtual safety car to clear up some more debris. We saw Perez retiring the car after this, unable to serve his five-second penalty from driving into Magnussen. Now, if I remember correctly, because he didn't serve this penalty at that race, he would have to serve it at the next one. So Red Bull decided that on lap 40, they would send him back out to serve the penalty and then retire the car right after that. This is the first time I've ever seen that happen. I'd love to hear what your guys' thoughts on that are, because I certainly have some thoughts.
So is that because the car was retired, right? Because you would think they would just tack 5 seconds on to his end of race time, and that's where he'd finish position-wise, but because he didn't have an end of race time due to the DNF, is that why it would have gone to the next race?
I'm thinking that this is a penalty that he had to serve in the race, and because he didn't serve it, it would be tacked on to the next one.
But, so what's the difference of a penalty served in the race when like Alonso last year in Jeddah or Alonso this year with the 22nd? Where does that difference come into play, I guess, is where I'm confused.
I'm thinking because they can't drop him, he's DNF'd technically, they can't drop his place, his penalty would mean nothing at that point. And I think a lot of penalties sometimes mean nothing anyway. But it was interesting. I think it was the first time I saw this combo of this penalty would be carried over and also a car coming out of retirement just to serve it. Weird.
So it was retired and it came out of retirement to serve it and then re-retired?
Yep, the car was in the garage on lap 12. 30 or so laps later, we see Perez coming out for a single lap just to pit, serve that penalty, go around the track one more time, and then retire again.
Like, I've been watching F1 for like 6 years now, and like I didn't even know he could unretire
I didn't either.
A car.
But I mean, at the end of the day, it's a smart move by Red Bull, and every other team would do that, I think, if they could get away with it. So, I mean, end of the day, I think every team's doing that.
Should they get away with it, though?
Absolutely. I think if it's in the rules like that, and the FIA keeps doing the stuff they're doing, let them do it.
Well, I think what it comes down to is, like, when you retire in a car, right? Let's put that in quotations. What does that truly mean?
Yeah.
Is that just that you move your car into the garage and, as history says, you're no longer going to race? Are you establishing to the stewards that you are no longer in this race? Does that matter in the grand scheme of things? Do the stewards need to know that?
Yeah.
Or are you able to go in, like in NASCAR, for example, you see it all the time. Car gets like, you know, the whatever wreck, they come into the garage, they duct tape the living crap out of it. I know it's not duct tape. And then they come out and they finish the last whatever, 30, 40, 50, however it long to take to repair the car. Right. Now, there's no benefit to the NASCAR driver in doing so. They're not going to be in points contention. So I would assume it's that same concept where in F1, the difference between you got 20 drivers versus 40, whatever it is, 45, 40, whatever it is, right? So that points difference to get to 10 when you're 25 laps behind is simply not attainable, where, I don't know, super smart on Red Bull side. I think you're right, Cole. Every other team would do it. Should they allow it? Yeah, I mean, who's to say when a car is officially the stewards come out and say that car's not safe to drive on the track again? Absolutely, don't let them on. But if the car's safe, why not?
I want to kind of add to your point there, Tyler. If, let's say, 11 cars retired from all getting in wrecks or something like that, whoever's team gets out there and fixes their car and gets their guy out there, why wouldn't they go out there and take the free point? I think it's the same line. So I think we can't argue that way because I think, you know, I mean, if you can get your car back out there to get the points, do it. So I think we had to look at it that way.
That's a really, really, really good way to look at it.
And like judging from what I just looked up, allegedly it is like doesn't say you can't in the rules. It's just really rare.
Yeah, really rare. I think the thing that I'm having the hardest part of it is that what in the rules, and there has to be some sort of circumstances depending on the crash or the damage to the car. We saw that huge collision with Zhou either last year or the year before on Silverstone, where he got turned over, flew into the wall or into barriers, ended up sideways. George got out of his car to check that, wanted to get back in his car and start racing, and the stewards said no. So I don't know. Maybe there are some rules that I'm not seeing that put both situations at a different level, but they throw in a new tire for George. He can race. Perez got like 30 laps in the garage to get his car fixed, and then he was out. Again, he's not racing for points, but he is racing for the next race.
Right? Let me ask you this, and I don't know the answer to this. Was George able to drive that car to the garage, or did it get towed to the garage?
It got towed to the garage because they didn't let him get back into the car.
My second question would be, did Perez last year go to the garage, or did
he went
get
to
towed?
The garage himself?
I think that right there is the difference. If you get I think that right there is the difference, because if you have to get your tar towed, red flag.
Yeah.
Now they might have had a red flag in the incident last year, but it wasn't been due to Perez.
That's
but
fair.
If both cars were to get back to it at that point, you're establishing there's a stop to the race.
Yeah.
And so I think that might be where it lies. If George was able to get back out of the, and I think once you get out of the car on the track, you're more or less establishing that you are out of the race.
Yep.
I think that might have something to do with it.
Sure.
I don't know.
You're
but.
Totally right. Yeah. There's definitely different circumstances to both situation. I'm sure. And you're totally right. I overlooked that the red flag in that, you know, a George situation versus it's just, he got it to the garage. Those are all really good points.
But again, kudos to George, though,
for
getting out of the car and going checking on John. You know,
like,
at the end of the day, nothing else mattered but his safety.
I was gutted, yeah.
And I mean, along with all that, like, obviously all the cars will do that. And it's always like one of the weird things I think that a lot of people talk about is like the rules behind everything. Like, we have like these weird rules for this, you know, the weird rules. You know, obviously a lot of us here are football fans. We had a ton of weird rules that we're all like, eh. But unless they actually get brought up, nobody really thinks about them. So it's a good point you're bringing up, Joe. And it's kind of just like, the rule is the rule. If, you know, if Ferrari dealt with the same thing, they would do the same thing.
I think it's kind of like, is it like sleazy?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's in the rules.
Maybe it's just because
I would 100%. I would.
It's also maybe just because it's Red Bull. Maybe it rubs me the wrong way a little bit more.
I think it also matters too because Japan was at the end of the year last year, where Perez and Hamilton were in that battle for the second that P2.
Mm-hmm.
So that 5 seconds could have really mattered.
Yep. Absolutely. Right. Well, wrapping up recap really quick. Lance Stroll, third car to retire, followed by Logan, and then Albon after that, making for a bad weekend for Williams. We saw the final, Verstappen, Norris, and then Piastri, a 19-second gap between first and second, and then a 17-second gap between second and third. Max finished getting the points, enough points, for Red Bull to get the constructors in that race. So that was declared right then and there. It was a rough weekend for Perez. Obviously, I think, in my opinion, he just made some really dumb mistakes. I was watching the recap. He kept on taking the same corner way too tight with other cars around him. And we had a really strong weekend for McLaren. Both drivers proving to understand this track well, enhanced by a very good car for that time in the season. And then I know just because these three are in the rotation for podium, Ferrari, not much to note, but also a strong finish. We saw them fighting with McLaren on the pit stop strategy and then fighting Mercedes on the trap. Finishing fourth and sixth, Charles and Carlos, respectively.
So, I mean, we don't really have a ton of time, but is there anything we're looking for this weekend before we go into our podium predictions?
I think it's the same thing as, you know, last race. I mean, everybody's watching that Ferrari-Red Bull fight. See if they can actually bring it to them this race.
That gap. The gap. Seeing if it can get closer.
Yeah, and then on top of that, I think that is Mercedes going to show out and actually be able to battle McLaren?
Yeah, and I don't think they will, personally, but...
And then I think the same as the last couple weeks as well. I mean, everybody's looking to see who's going to steal those points at the bottom. Who's going to steal that 9th-10th spot, and I think that's
huge. Haas going to get another point.
And if they do, this is huge at this point. If they can keep, you know, stealing those points at the bottom, I mean, we're going to see them a lot higher than we used to.
Yeah, for sure. So let's just head right into it then. Joe, who's on your podium this weekend?
Well, Max is going to have a better race than he did last a few weeks ago, so he's definitely on the podium. And then I've noticed however many pods we've been doing this for, I've said the exact same three, so I'm switching it up this week. Lando, I want him on the podium. I think he had a very strong last year. I think he's going to come out swinging again this year. And then Sainz, I want him to just keep that momentum going.
Perfect. And I got Max. Obviously, I don't think he does that again. I'm going to put Max at, you know, he's going to win the race, but I'll put him in my top three as well as both Ferraris. I'll put Charles and Sainz up there.
All right. I originally had the same as you, Joe, but I want to have some shakeup in the overall points here. So I'm going to go with Verstappen, Sainz. I think Sainz and Verstappen are locks. I really wanted Lando, but I'm going to go with Checo.
Dang, that's nice. Because I'm going Max, obviously, but like, and I'm going Leclerc, and I really want to go Lando, but I also have a gut feeling this is a bounce back weekend for Checo as well. So that's crazy that you said that, and I got nothing to lose being last right now in points. So I'd love to see Lando instead of Checo, though. As a fan of F1, I would love to see boom, boom, boom like that. That'd be wild.
Yeah, I think any other track, I'd probably say Checo, but watching that recap from last year, he was just not. He just didn't know how to drive. McLaren's, yeah, they were right there. Yeah.
Yeah, I just think that he's going to bounce back. But for those keeping score at home, Joe is currently in the lead with 6 points. Cole and I are tied at 4, and Smelty is bringing down the rear at 3. So it's truly anybody's ball game. But
I'm bringing it down. We're just down there. I'm not like weighing it.
You're the Alpine of the pod right now.
Whoa! Oof. All right, yeah, that's yeah.
Rough. We also do have a Red Bull.
You know what? Never mind about Lando. Let's go check on you this weekend, homie. I'm bringing down the rear. But with that, we'll just go ahead and wrap this puppy up. Obviously, remember to like, comment, subscribe. Obviously, YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Music, wherever you listen to the banter. And we'll see you next week.
Don't forget to follow, like, and subscribe. Tune in next time for more Banter with the Boys.